A seat. Good morning and welcome. We're now ready to hear our second case this morning, April 6, 2023. We're sitting in Rochester, very happy to be with you all this morning. That second case is State of Minnesota versus Jonathan Gabriel Hernandez Silva, and the case number is 822-1079. So, counsel, just a few remarks before you begin with your arguments this morning. You may make your argument at the podium. The clock here, can you both see it, is counting down the time. And I know you're both familiar with our time limits, but I'll go over them anyway so there's no confusion. Appellant will have 15 minutes to present argument. Respondent will also have 15 minutes to present argument, and then appellant will have an additional 5 minutes to use for rebuttal. We are making a recording of the argument this morning. I ask that to preserve the integrity of that recording, you please introduce yourself and identify the party you're representing before you begin giving your argument to us. With that, we are ready to begin. Counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready, you may start.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Mark Nyvold, representing the appellant, Jonathan Silva. I'll begin by getting right to the point, which is the district court made a clear error of fact in finding that the officer, Metcalf, felt a rock-like object when he moved up and down Mr. Silva's pocket. That's not what the facts show. The district court relied on, in doing that, relied on a statement in the complaint that says, without manipulation or immediate contact, Officer Metcalf felt a hard rock-like substance. Well, that was in the complaint, but that's not what the squad video indicates Metcalf saying.
Well, I'm having a little trouble wrapping my head around what the record is for our purposes today, what the factual record is, because there was an agreement that the district court could consider the complaint, but there wasn't a stipulation to it. And I guess I would be really interested in hearing your view on what that means when a party agrees that a district court can consider a complaint.
The counsel for the state has indicated that, you know, the complaint could be used for general purposes. I think that's
what is a general purpose?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know what that really means. It's not binding. But I think it does mean this, that Mr. Silva did not agree with that statement. The counsel for the state also says, again, it was offered for general information. Well, that, to me, indicates background, context, not the key issue in the case. And I think it's clear, and I don't think Mr. McIntosh will contend that Mr. Silva agreed that that's true. But it's also unfair, I think, to say that it could actually be considered in resolving this issue. There wasn't anything said. I mean, the record, there wasn't any testimony taken at that hearing, so I ordered the transcript. So this conversation about, well, you can consider the complaint, things in the complaint for general information, that's not on the record. I mean, the district court, in its order, makes a reference to the following facts are drawn from the complaint and the exhibit. Okay, so the complaint, its status is murky, okay? And, you know, the state had the burden here. And if they wanted to make it clear that Mr. Silva was agreeing with the statement in the complaint that without manipulation on immediate contact, Metcalf felt a hard rock-like substance, that should have been made clear. So this really wasn't fair to the to Mr. Silva.
Also consider the appellant's burden on appeal, which is to present a record of what occurred, and you know the as you noted, the transcript wasn't ordered. Has that burden been satisfied? I mean, can we just rely on nothing making a determination as to the reason the complaint was offered or how it was offered?
Well, I had no reason to believe there was a transcript. I contacted the court reporter, and the court reporter said there's no transcript. There wasn't anything taken down. So that's why I didn't order it. And the other thing is the rest of the documentation made clear that what was going to be considered, would be the video, the squad video. There wasn't any idea that there's a side discussion, which the court reporter did not take down, and I couldn't get at that point. So, but, you know, the point is the complaint is suspect to begin with, because how do you go from, if you watch the video, Metcalf never makes any statement at all like he felt on immediate contact a rock-like object.
To that point, counsel, actually the last paragraph of the district court's analysis right above conclusions says that based on his training and experience, Officer Metcalf immediately believed the baggie in that pocket contained a narcotic, which he suspected was cocaine. The district court didn't find that it was a rock-like substance that he found until after, at the conclusion of that paragraph, the contents were later determined to be methamphetamine and also an unlawful rock-like substance. So it seems like the court's analysis hewed to what was on the video. That is that he says, I think it was a narcotic.
Well, he says that, I believe he says that in the video.
Right.
But if I can just take a moment to look. So in paragraph 5 in the court's memorandum, about halfway through, she says Metcalf felt what he immediately perceived to be a baggie with a hard rock-like substance.
Right, but I'm looking at that last paragraph, and it seems to be the sort of the synopsis of what the district court was finding. And the district court says, based on his training and experience, Officer Metcalf immediately believed the baggie in that pocket contained a narcotic.
Okay, well, that and what I just read are clear error, okay, because the court... if you listen to the video or watch and listen
I
to
have.
It, he never says anything about a rock-like object. He says, I patted a nice baggie of something.
Right.
He said, I felt something on a bag. I felt the outside of the pocket. I felt a baggie. I went in. And that's when he's manipulating it. He says, I felt a powdery residue. And then he pulls it out. Okay. He never in that entire video says he felt anything hard or rock-like.
Agreed.
So... that's coming out of thin air at the time the complaint is written, and then the court writes its order based on that. Because then, obviously, the state puts that in their memorandum. Okay, so this is a record that that just doesn't exist. It's not correct, consistent with the facts that we have. And I don't know what counsel for the state is going to say to justify where this rock-like language came from, except that it was put into the complaint. And the other thing is, that's not even really, we don't even know if that's Metcalf. If you look at the complaint, Metcalf's not the complainant, it's Captain Eric Rethmeyer. Okay, so who told Rethmeyer what to say? Where did he get his information? Did he get it from Metcalf? Did Metcalf suddenly say, I felt a hard rock-like object? Well, he's got a video where he's never says anything like that. And he's holding the baggie up, okay? Never at all says anything about rocks. And I looked at it. I couldn't see any rock-like objects.
Well, there did seem to be some, to my view at least, it did seem like there were some larger chunks in the bag, maybe the size of a golf ball. I couldn't quite say that. But
well,
there were some chunks of something.
Well, there wasn't anything that jumped out to, or made it reasonable for me to believe that if those were lumps of some sort, that it would be a hard rock-like object, because there's clearly loose,
malleable
powder.
Absolutely. There's no question. There's a lot of powder in there, too.
Yeah. So, and again, not once at the scene in that entire squad video does he say anything about rocks.
Absolutely.
So this has all the earmarks of just being kind of manipulated, pardon, you know, no pun intended, to create a record that to prosecute him or to support the search after the fact.
Where would your, what would the state of your argument be if the complaint had been admitted as an exhibit? Would you agree that would weaken your argument?
No, I think I could still say that that complaint is not, was not correctly and reasonably written. Okay, it's not, it doesn't have record support. Just because it's in the record doesn't make it true or doesn't mean it's credible. It just means it's in the record. And again, the status that it does have is murky at best. And it was really not, I think, fair to the to Mr. Silva to have that come in on that basis. And I really, I don't know what else I would have, you know, where the court reporter is telling me there's, I ordered everything. Okay, you can see I wasn't picking and choosing. And I talked to the judge's court reporter. And that's what I was told. There's nothing there to, no record made. So I don't even think that's in stenographic form anyway. So we're kind of in this unfortunate situation where, you know, Mr. Silva has to defend against something that really isn't, you know, he shouldn't have to contend with because there's no real evidence of a rock-like object in there.
Isn't there a provision in the appellate rules, rule maybe 110 might be the rule, that you can, that counsel can supplement the record when there isn't a record? I think there's a provision there.
Well, I've read that. I had to read it, you know, when I ordered this. Yes, but I don't have any reason to believe there's anything else. And the attorneys are long gone. Ashley Steinberg, I tried to reach her. To talk about it.
Right, that's what I recall the process being, that the attorneys can get together and say what the record is, and if not agreeable, the district judge.
Yeah, so I had, she was gone from the office. I think, you know, Mr. McIntosh will confirm that. So I couldn't really try to get the behind the scenes or on scene look at, you know, what happened, you know, and she'd say, oh, well, we said this or agreed to this at the omnibus hearing. Well, the court reporter would have taken that down. Okay, I think this is maybe an informal discussion. So, but be that as it may, it there's just no reason to credit this statement in the complaint that is so much at variance with what he's saying on the in the video.
My question is, so let's say that we agree with you that there's not enough with regard to the finding about a rock-like substance. Can you explain why feeling the bulge itself was not enough for him to take the substance out of his pocket?
Well, you could come up to someone on the street and many people would have a bulge in their pocket. Okay, I had a bunch of Kleenex in my pocket a little while back. I took it out, but it was a bulge in the pocket. A bulge doesn't really mean anything.
But I think, I mean, when I'm looking at the video, I think that he clearly felt that he was feeling a baggie, if I'm recalling from the video. Yes. And so is feeling a baggie enough for him to reach into the pocket?
Well, he thinks it's a baggie. At that point, he's still on the outside of the pocket. And he's, so what support does he have for saying there's a baggie? He felt something that was discernible, you know, I don't know. I don't want to characterize it as a lump, but something, you know, it wasn't just like a toothpick or, you know, he wasn't trying to feel, you know, pocket lint maybe in the very bottom. I mean, he felt something, yes, but how can he characterize that? How can he justify going in and then manipulating it? Even if he can go in based on just the fact that there's a bulge, he's manipulating it. He says, I felt the powdery residue. He's going like this with his hands. So he didn't feel, and again, he didn't say there were rocks or lumps at that point either. He says, I pulled it out because I felt a powdery residue. That's what he said.
I hate to keep coming back to the record, but I just want to make sure I'm understanding what it is, you know, what facts are in front of us. I'm not seeing I'm not seeing that there was an agreement to consider the complaint for general purposes. Where is that rooted
in
the record?
In Mr. McIntosh's brief.
That's the only source of that information?
Yes, I believe.
Because I'm not seeing it in the district court's order. I mean, the district court didn't reference that agreement, right?
No. Well, I don't believe it's in the...
I mean, I'm looking at the order.
Yes.
I don't see it.
Yes, okay. Well, I've looked at it too, but just to double check. But I agree that's not in there. And I don't know how it suddenly becomes part of the record. And it's just extremely suspicious that it gets... the complaint is written this way. I don't think Metcalf would or could have written that if he'd written the complaint. I don't know if I need to go into this, but there really wasn't any other basis to, let's see, to arrest him. I mean, all these offenses, I looked them all up. They're all petty misdemeanor. Anything they could have charged him with, not having a valid carry permit, the article hanging from his mirror, and not stopping before leaving an alley. They're all petty misdemeanors. There wouldn't have even been a basis to arrest. So to the extent that might have given them some other information about what was in the pocket, they didn't have that. Thank you.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And next we will hear from counsel for respondents.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Dan McIntosh. I'm the county attorney in Steele County, representing the state of Minnesota today. I would like to start with the question that you first asked about what does it mean that the court can't consider this complaint. There was a court hearing. Parties were there. There was a stipulation to basically waive foundation for Exhibit 1, which is the body cam that's in the record. And there was discussion on the record. I'm not going to stand here because I'm the only one in the room who was there. I can't supplement that record now, but I don't think it's accurate that there's no record or no transcript of what went on there. But the parties' briefs do talk about the court being able to consider the complaint, just the information. It's accurate. There's not a formal stipulation that those facts are true or accurate, but that's just the information that can be considered by the court. And that's what the district court also reflected in its order.
Well, that kind of gets back to Judge Gaitis's question of what does consider mean? I mean, if it's not in evidence, what is it that, what can it be used for?
Well, I'm going to give you a roundabout answer because I think I have to.
You might have to.
I think that this whole issue gets back to what was truly being raised at the hearing. Because the motion that was filed talked about the questioning and the expansion of the stop. And that is all borne out on Exhibit 1, on the body cam. Their interaction, the discovery of the weapons. If that's the issue that was truly being raised, which that's our position that was being raised, then it does make sense that this is the factual record that comes about. When you look at the motion...
But how would we know from that record, other than statements that the officer may have made, what the state of mind of the officer was?
Well, and that's, I have to go to where I was going with Judge Rodenberg. I don't know if the state of, based on the motion that was filed, I don't know if the officer's state of mind was necessarily at issue. What the motion was challenging was that he asked questions, particularly about those weapons, and expanded the scope of the stop. That's all borne out objectively on Exhibit 1. When you look at the motion that was filed, the defense brief at the omnibus, taking those now compared to the appellate brief, it's two different issues altogether. This plain feel issue was not argued, was not raised, and the point of the issue of the record you know, Mr. Silva was there with counsel. Had they wanted to cross-examine the officer, we just bring him in and have him testify. They waived any cross about these arguments.
Well, but as the representative of the state, didn't you have a burden to call the officer yourself? I mean, that's not incumbent on the defense.
Absolutely not. But again, with the motion that was raised, and I don't mean to keep harping on that, but I believe that objective information and the officer's state of mind really wouldn't matter. So I did propose a stipulation.
So you're saying I didn't have sufficient notice of what was even being, you know, raised today at that time. Otherwise, I would have called the officer.
Well, absolutely, because what he felt, how he felt it, whether there was manipulation, what his perception was, his training and experience, those are issues for testimony if that's going to be the issue. And that's not seeable or observable on Exhibit 1.
Well, the district court did go on to say that the briefing by the defendant below included the claim that the frisk was not carefully limited to weapons.
Right.
So it seems like the district court was, however the artful or inartful the motion was phrased, it seems like the district court did get to the question of the legitimacy of the frisk.
I agree that the court got there to wrap up the issue, but even with what was argued by the defense, the Minnesota Supreme Court decision on Dickerson stood for the proposition that no plain field exception even existed. And so I think the defense position at the omnibus was you can't seize these drugs during a weapon search no matter what, regardless of what it feels like, regardless of what's there. The Supreme Court decision after Dickerson recognize there is plain feel, and other Minnesota cases have said that, but that the argument here really gets at whether there was a plain feel basis to seize those drugs, and that was not alleged, argued, briefed, anything at the district court. And so that's kind of the first part of what the state's position is here.
Counsel, I mean, how I've understood your argument is that it's very focused on the motion, which is what you included in your addendum. But when I looked at the memorandum attached to the motion, it does seem like the memorandum raised these issues. Do you have case law on point that would say that we just look at the motion and not the content of the appellant's memorandum on the motion?
You're talking about the defense memorandum at the omnibus hearing?
Yes.
Yes, that's what I was getting at, is the only case that would be a search case that's cited is that Dickerson case, the Minnesota Supreme Court case. Askaruth is a expansion case that dealt with really what the focus of the motion was, expanding the scope of the stop through questioning, through confining the individual in the back of the seat. So I don't think there was any plain feel case law cited in support of that, either in the motion or in the memorandum. To Judge Rodenberg's point, the district court did cite.
So why did the district court reach that issue if no one raised it in their memorandum? I mean, I guess I think that it probably was raised in the memorandum. I see what you're saying about the motion, but I do think that perhaps the issue was raised in the memorandum. So why would the district court have reached that issue if it wasn't a live issue that was briefed to the district court?
Well, I would be speculating, but I know Judge Duncan, I think she would just go through analytically and close the loop to say the interaction was lawful and the ultimate seizure, which really was the issue, whether there would be suppression of the drugs, that there was a basis for that. So, again, obviously it's in the judge's order. I'm not saying that there isn't some case law cited at the end, but the clear thrust of this was the expansion through questioning. And that's what the parties argued. I wouldn't be able to speak any more than I did on why the judge found what she did.
And I guess my last question would be, you've cited to our case law about, you know, that we shouldn't consider issues for the first time on appeal, but does that case law apply when the district court did actually analyze the issue? I mean, I understand your argument is that it wasn't raised and perhaps the district court shouldn't have reached the issue, but we do have district court findings on this issue.
Yep. Well, and I think it really gets the broad picture here is the record that was developed was based on what was moved, what was argued going into the omnibus, You know, as I said in an earlier answer, it wouldn't make any sense for the, if this was the issue that was raised up front, that I wouldn't bring in that officer to say, what did you feel? How did you feel it? Was your hand moving? None of that is borne out on this video. I mean, even to argue that there's evidence of manipulation, that is not seen on the video, and it's not borne out in the complaint. So there is not a factual basis that he manipulated this. But if the challenge was, even up to the point of a pat search, that that's okay, but you couldn't take the additional step of feeling this, or once you felt something to remove it, that is a separate issue. And I understand what you're saying. I agree with you that the district court made a finding on that. I believe it was just to close the loop, as I said, as just kind of an analytical framework. But there would have been no advantage to the state of not calling the officer had that been the issue up front.
Do we have any case law, do you know, of a circumstance where an issue wasn't raised and so we don't reach the issue because the, you know, district court maybe went one analytical step farther than was necessary?
I don't have that case law on hand, I'm afraid.
Well, there is case law that says that the appellate court can address an issue that wasn't raised below so long as the record is adequately developed. What would be your response to that case? I mean, is the record adequately developed here?
Well, I think if you go the other route to say either you will consider it or you would consider it raised at the omnibus, it gets back to what happened at that hearing. And again, there's a little bit of a black hole there, but it, you know, the Mr. Silva, through his counsel, agreed to the body of evidence that was going to be put before the district court. That couldn't be forced on him. As you said before, the state has a burden of proof. So once he's agreed to that body of facts, the district court made findings simply from that body of facts. And so, you know, there was choice
would
there.
Would you agree that we don't really know what he agreed to, though? I mean, given the current state of the record.
I would agree that the court doesn't. I do, because I was there, but I mean, there should have been a transcript ordered by the appellant.
And do you have any reason to dispute that a transcript was requested and not produced?
Oh, I wouldn't be able to say what was told to Mr. Nyvold. I'm not saying he's misrepresenting anything. I just know the state of our courthouse was, there was a court reporter there. I mean, there would have been a record made, and there is no testimony. That's clear to everyone. The officer didn't come and testify, but we wouldn't have had a back chambers discussion about the record and then come out and just throw an exhibit out. And I mean, we just wouldn't do that. And Judge Duncan wouldn't do that either. So that is unfortunate that if that was represented to Mr. Nyvold, that nothing was there. Maybe the court reporter misunderstood and thought there was testimony being sought. I wouldn't be able to speak to that.
I understand completely.
So I'm sorry. I didn't know if I completely answered your question.
You did.
Either.
Okay. No, you did.
I'd like to go back to a question Judge Gaetis, I think, asked appellant, which is, I think your representation is that the complaint could be used for general information, that was the scope of the agreement. So if, you know, we take judicial notice that was the scope of the agreement, then what was fair game for the district court to rely on in making its decision based on, I mean, sort of that very generic.
Sure.
That very generic information as to what the right. appellant might have agreed to.
And the party's briefs at the omnibus stage frame it a little bit differently. Defense says general information. My brief says for context. What I take that to mean, and I could only speak for myself, but with any body cam, there's going to be multiple details that aren't directly observable. So the surrounding context of how it was seized, what was seized, certainly would be included from my point of view. But again, had there been a notice of that we were talking about a plain field seizure, we never would have gotten to the complaint issue. So understanding the questioning was part of the motion, the general context there is there's a traffic stop, there's a day, we just didn't have the officer there to testify about some of those foundational facts. So I, It's hard to answer that because we're dealing, in my view at least, we're dealing with two different things, that of what was the understanding of the hearing going into it and what's been argued on appeal. But again, if we take the record as it is now for what's argued on appeal, the court did take facts directly from this body of evidence. Even if you leave aside the complaint, there's demonstration of the officer feeling something. You can't see it on the video, obviously. He tells him, "I feel a bag of drugs," and he seizes it. The bag of drugs itself is observable in the video at different times. There appears to be mass to it. It's another important distinction between that Dickerson case that was cited. That dealt with 0.2 grams. We're dealing with 24 grams here, so it's a much different scope even of the object that's involved. And so even if you discounted the importance of the complaint completely, the video, the exhibit, does bear out what happened here. And I think counsel has criticized here and in his brief about the officer not using certain words, or almost that the officer has some burden to live narrate the body cam, but certainly you can see what's objectively viewable there, the size of the object, the interaction. I mean, just before reaching to the left pocket with the drugs.
Or appellant is arguing that the state had the burden to have the officer show up and testify. I mean, right. I mean,
yes, unless that's waived. There's no doubt about that in a general, if the motion's filed, I have to present evidence. I'm not disputing that one bit. And we certainly would have done that had that, had the agreement between the parties not been what it was.
I guess I have a question, I guess a hypothetical in the other direction, which would be if we take judicial notice that a record was not made, who would have had the burden to make sure that the district court was creating a record for us to review, or does anyone have the burden of making sure that that record is created?
I believe that rests on the appellant, although if something is, there is a rule that says if it's not created, I can, or something is not ordered, I can object and I can intervene as well. I put a footnote in my brief, you know, just trying to reflect what the party's brief state to at least reflect some indication of what our understanding was. The district court obviously just said it could consider those facts. So that's what we have right now.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I guess I'm just trying to figure out in the absence of,
right,
the absence of a record, you know, what are the parameters and who bore the burden in terms, yeah, of different.
I believe it's the appellant up front. I'm out of my time, so I don't know if I should.
Good timing. If you have an answer, you may offer it.
Yeah.
If not, you're free to
sit down. All right. I think I've said enough. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Just picking up where the court and Mr. McIntosh left off. Again, if you look at the record, every proceeding in this case, I ordered I ordered it. I mean, I've got, must be 7, 8, 9 transcript items, even more. So if I could have gotten it, I would have. But let me go to this question of whether the state had notice of, you know, what the defense contentions were. The defense went first with its memorandum of law, and that on,
and did, I just to clarify, yeah, did that precede the hearing that we don't have the transcript,
no,
of?
These were after.
Okay, so they were,
these came after.
Got it. Okay.
So on the on page 4, I won't read the paragraph.
Well,
to you,
let me just interrupt. If this was after, how would the state have had notice at the time of the hearing?
Well, my point is that the state responded to it. Okay, if you look at their memorandum, which is, you know, they address that issue. They respond to it. So.
And conversely, they did not object to not having an opportunity to make a sufficient record?
Correct. So And then the district court, and I think the court is aware of this, fully addressed this. They, you know, had a lengthy discussion about Lemert and Dickerson. And so if the state had been, said, well, wait a minute, you can't address that, they, you know, they would have said something about that. It was in play. It was, no one had any, you know, was prevented from fully addressing the issue. You know, the actually, those were really the only two additional points I had to make, which is, again, I just wanted to add this. And I absolutely had no financial incentive myself or Mr. Silva not to get all the transcripts, because I, under State versus Peterson, since Mr. Silva could have had the public defender office represent him, they were paying for the transcripts. And they do that when private counsel takes over the case. So neither Mr. Silver or I had to pay anything for these transcripts. So, thank you.
Do you agree with respondent that at the district court, it would have been your client that had the burden of making sure that a record was being taken at the district court level? Both parties should have made sure a record was created.
Well,
so.
I guess both parties have a responsibility. I mean, you can't just sit back. If you're the defense counsel and there's something going on that you need to have transcribed, yes, you have an obligation to do that. But that didn't happen. Neither side. The court reporter said there is nothing to transcribe. So apparently. I don't know if they were aware that the court reporter wasn't taking anything down. I don't know. Maybe there's an audio, you know, recording system. Maybe they couldn't tell. But
just so that we can go back, where did the court reporter say there's nothing to transcribe in responding to the transcript request, or was that something that we won't have a record of?
There wouldn't be a record of that, because the court reporter. Who would have done that also did other parts. There were numerous other hearings that she did. So this was me over the phone going over each hearing in the register of actions and saying, did you do this? And she told me what she took and had a record of and what she didn't.
Okay. So you didn't just go in and request a record of every single hearing that occurred. Before you did that, you contacted the court reporter to determine what there were notes of.
Yeah, who did it? I wanted to make sure that I was getting it from the right person. So I spoke or emailed with every court reporter to confirm what hearings they did and, you know, that it was one I needed. And the reporter who I think would have been at this hearing was Judge Duncan, court reporter for forever. She had retired by the time I spoke to her.
So, okay. Right, thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you both very much for your arguments this morning. They're very helpful. And that concludes the case. The case is now submitted to us, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame, which is 90 days.
Thank you.
Thank you.